Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the great American sports writer, Jeff Perlman. Jeff's latest book is called Football for a Buck, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. It's about the United States Football League, which was the last football league to challenge the NFL. It was a short-lived challenge, though, the league lasting for only three seasons in the mid-80s. How did its demise come about? Well, a certain Donald Trump has a lot to answer for. Jeff, great to talk to you.
Wait, first of all, I got to say, you made one mistake there.
Go on.
You call me the great American sports writer, but, you know, since Trump was elected, I'm actually sleeping on your couch. You just haven't noticed me there.
You've been run out of the country or left of your own volition.
I didn't know. I ran.
You've written some brilliant books on everything. We spoke to you before about Brett Favre and the 86 Mets. I get the sense, though, that writing about the USFL, that it was a real labor of love.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I grew up in the 80s. I'm a kid of the 80s. I loved the USFL. I loved everything about it. It was a real challenge to the NFL. You know, it had great uniforms. If you just Google, anyone can Google USFL uniforms, you'll be blown away. Bright colors, colors like champagne and rust. And there were teams like the Stallions and the Showboats and the Outlaws and the Gamblers. And they started stealing NFL players left and right. It was just really exciting, really exciting.
Donald Trump's involvement in the USFL has understandably grabbed most of the headlines around the book, and I guess it won't do sales any harm, but there's a lot more to this book and the USFL. It was a pretty remarkable 3 years, it seems, for American football. How did the league come about?
So basically, there was a guy named David Dixon, and he was in New Orleans, Louisiana, and he wanted the NFL to come to New Orleans, and the NFL was dragging its feet. This guy was like, well, I'm going to start my own league. And but the Saints came. I think it was 1961, the Saints came. So he dropped the idea. But then a couple of people are like, you know, it's still a really good idea. And in the 80s, the idea was a spring football league. It was have regional teams draft their players regionally. So a team in Florida, just as an example, will draft from Florida colleges. And the idea was your fans are going to be fans who have seen these kids play in high school, seen them play in college, and they're going to feel a loyalty toward them. It was really smart. So it started in 1983 as a spring football league. It was a really good league. And then, they struggled financing. But it was a good league. And then a certain owner came along.
Yeah. And was the aim of the league at those initial stages, was it to challenge the NFL's monopoly, or was it to almost complement the NFL in the offseason to just provide some entertainment for football fans?
I wouldn't say it was to complement the NFL, but it wasn't to destroy the NFL. It was really, there's enough football to go around. Spring is kind of a dead time here in America for sports. You know, baseball is a long, long season. They play 162 games. So it's a dead time. And people love football. You know, the guy David Dixon who started the league used to say, yeah, football is considered a fall sport, but it's only considered a fall sport because people first played it in the fall. You know, like there was no logistical reason. Like if you're a bobsledder, you need cold weather, right? Ice hockey, you need ice. Football, you can play anytime you want. You know, you don't need warm weather, you don't need cold weather. So the idea was just, why not spring football? Football's popular.
And quality-wise, over those 3 years, what sort of level did it get to? Like, was this a sort of last chance you for the 80s, that it was full of misfits and players who couldn't make it elsewhere? Or, as you say, the players who were coming from the NFL, were they taking a step down? Or how was it seen?
So I would say, if the NFL was a 10, and playing with your friends in the backyard is a 1, I would say the USFL was like an 8.5 to a 9.
Right.
Where it was really, really good. The two best teams were the Philadelphia Stars and the Michigan Panthers. Those teams could have played in the NFL, and they would have been good NFL teams. Not great, but very good. They stole a lot of NFL players over the years. Some really famous American football players started in the USFL. Jim Kelly, the quarterback. Doug Williams, who won a Super Bowl, played in the NFL. Brian Sipe. There were a lot of 200 guys ended up playing in the NFL who started their careers in the USFL. So it was it had to grow from what it started to what it was. But by the end, it was really, really, really good football.
Yeah, because I guess you look at the NFL now and the level of professionalism. I'm not sure where the NFL was in terms of professionalism in the mid-80s, but you've spoken to so many people about that time. I think you spoke to 400 people in the writing of this book. The players who were involved, were they taking this seriously, even though it was short-lived? At the time, were they thinking, this is going to set me up for life? This is something I'm going to take as serious as possible?
So it depended. Some of the guys just saw it as a chance to get to the NFL. Like, this is my chance to make the NFL. Other guys saw it as a chance to make huge money. Like, Steve Young out of college signed a $40 million contract to play with the LA Express. That's a ton of money. So it was like a wide, wide mashing of players. They were offering, you know, Donald Trump, as bad as he was for the league, as the owner of the New Jersey Generals, was paying guys a ton of money to jump. So people are getting rich off the USFL. The problem is the league died after 3 years. Like, Steve Young signed a $40 million contract. He saw about $8 million.
Right.
That's all I got. I mean, it's still good money for you and I, but, you know, not when you expect 40 and you're only getting eight, not so great.
Yeah. I saw when the review said football for a book features so much cocaine use it makes Scarface look like Finding Nemo.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like, the Houston Gamblers are one of the best teams, and their offensive line coach insisted, not just requested, insisted that his players use steroids. Like, if you're not using steroids, you're not on my team. Their star wide receiver used to smoke a joint before every game to get ready for the game. There was cocaine all over the place. There was one, the San Antonio Gunslingers were just known for having cocaine plant users. The Birmingham Stallions showed up for a game they were supposed to win easily, and their entire defense had been snorting coke the night before, almost all of them, and they lost. You know, it was like, it was the 80s, and the 80s were a time of excess, especially here in America when it came to drugs.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize it was quite that prevalent in the league at the time. Was it an enjoyable time for them?
Yeah. It's one of those things. I always say, it's like it's like you're flying to Hawaii on vacation, and the plane flight is really rocky and terrifying. Like, that was the USFL. It was great and exciting, but also terrifying. Like, there was, you know, Steve Young, he talked about being on the bus for the LA Express, driving to a game, and the bus driver just stops the bus and says, somebody better pay me my $500 or we're not moving. And they had to go around and collect the money for the guy. You know, like, there were unpaid bills, and the San Antonio Gunslingers, another team, their owners stopped paying. They would all get their checks, and maybe three or four would clear, and the others would bounce. So they would all rush to the bank after practice, like in this race, just to be the first ones to cash their checks because most of them weren't going to. So it was crazy and fun and frustrating. But I think most of them would say it was joyful.
And what sort of fan base was there? What sort of attendances were they getting? And were the NFL fans just looking for something to do in the offseason?
I think a lot. And I think a lot of them developed a loyalty. It's like if you're a Pearl Jam fan, but some small band comes along. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know what? I want to root for them because they're the underdog. They're not maybe you go to a Pearl Jam show and their opening band is like Mother's Load or something. And you're like, I'm gonna root for Mother's Load because they're small in the upstart. That was like the USFL. So they got a lot of NFL fans. They got a lot of football fans. This has developed a lot of their own. And the attendance, it really varied from place to place. The Trump's team in New York drew very well. Jacksonville, Florida.
What sort of crowds? The Jaguars.
So the Trump averaged about 38,000. Jacksonville, they average about 40. The reason the Jacksonville Jaguars exist now is because the Jacksonville Bulls came along first and drew so many fans. It was, you know, Memphis. Yeah, they showed there was a market. But then other markets, Oklahoma did terrible, Pittsburgh did terrible, Chicago did horrible. It was really hit or miss.
Mm. We get on in a moment then to where it all started to go horribly wrong and Donald Trump's involvement in it. But for those 2 or 3 years where it was up and running and they were somehow getting by, even if their checks bouncing and on the other end, even though they're signing $40 million contracts, did it ever look like it was going to be a viable business that if they just hung on in there, that this could have been a success?
It was always walking on the edge. I mean, the whole 3 years, it's like, is this going to make it? Is it not going to make it? It could make it. Maybe it will make it. Yeah, I don't think it's going to make it. It was like that the entire time. There's a lot of ill-advised spending. The first year they had 12 teams. The second year they expanded to 18. That's preposterous. Like, why would you expand by 6 teams after one season? It's crazy. They did it because every new team had to pay $6 million.
Right.
Still crazy. So they did a lot of really dumb things where you were like, I don't know. But then when they sued the NFL, for a minute you thought, I don't know, they're suing them for $1 billion. If they win this lawsuit, maybe this really happens.
So where does Donald Trump come into this?
Poison. Pure poison. I'm not kidding. He's a poisonous presence in the USFL. So he bought the New Jersey franchise after 1 year. They were owned by someone else in 1983. The guy put him for sale. Donald Trump bought him. He wants an NFL team. That's the only reason he's doing this. He had tried buying the Baltimore Colts of the NFL in 1980. Failed. He gets into this league. He has a secret meeting with the commissioner of the NFL, the rival league, Pete Rozelle, and tells him, I don't have any interest in this league. I just want an NFL team. What do I have to do to get in the NFL? Pete Rozelle says to him, as long as I'm the commissioner of the NFL, you're not going to be a part of this league. Because he saw him for what he is, a con man, a huckster, just a fraud. He saw it, though. So Trump pushes and pushes and pushes, and he convinces the other owners at Fall they should move to Fall and take on the NFL. It made no sense whatsoever, but the guy is nothing. If nothing else, he's a salesman extraordinaire. And he convinces these owners if they move to Fall, there's going to be an amazing TV deal waiting for them, which there wasn't. It was a total lie. The NFL actually decides to move to Fall. Trump says, we're going to sue the NFL. The NFL is going to want to settle with us because they're going to be so terrified. Well, the NFL doesn't settle. It goes to court here in New York City, where I am right now. And they're suing them basically for $1.3 billion for having a monopoly on television. And the NFL actually did have a monopoly on television, which here is illegal. And what the jury decided after a very long, very public, very sort of drama-filled trial was that, yes, the USFL was correct. The NFL had a monopoly, an illegal monopoly. And the jury ruled in favor of the USFL. The USFL won. It's actually a crazy moment. The jury's like, we find in favor of the USFL. And they start naming all the things they find in favor. USFL people are going crazy. Holy crap, we just won this lawsuit. Pete Rozelle, the commissioner of the NFL, I can't believe it. We lost the lawsuit. And then the jury says, our verdict that we are rewarding the USFL $1. And the reason they gave them $1 is because they said, even though the NFL did all this, the USFL was its own worst enemy.
The way you go through it, it's this remarkable 10 seconds in American sporting history where the NFL is potentially facing ruin and the USFL, the new kid in town, are poised to take over, certainly get probably level pegging and be able to challenge the NFL in all sorts of markets. And as the news comes through to the USFL people, they're off celebrating. All they hear is that they've won. They're off celebrating. Yeah. They don't listen to the second line of the sentence. And the fallout from that, I imagine, was pretty harsh on a lot of people.
It's actually like a movie where I interviewed different people, and it was like, so where were you when the settlement came? And like, the quarterback for the Philadelphia Stars was getting his master's degree, and the teacher interrupted the class to say, you're not going to believe this, but you guys just won the lawsuit. And he's like, yes! And he runs out to call his wife. This is before cell phones. And the wife is like, did you hear the settlement? You know, the general manager of the Orlando Renegades, another USFL team, is jumping up and down in the office screaming, we won, we won, I can't believe we won. Did you hear the settlement? Oh. So it's like this moment. And I don't think it would have ruined the NFL. I think you would have had an immediate merger where the NFL would have had to absorb several of the USFL teams.
Trump then, and so we're talking 35 years ago, he was still a rich man. He buys the New Jersey Generals, pays around $9 million. But David Dixon, at that stage, is he just happy to get any investment at all? He's not questioning people's intentions for the league. He just wants to get the investment, get the money rolling in, and worry about what happens down the line later.
Actually, Dixon was really interesting. Dixon left the league soon. His dream was to start a spring football league. He didn't really care about being a part of it. So he actually, part of the condition of him being an owner is that he founded the league was that he gets a franchise. And he actually sold his franchise rights to someone else and just left the league. So he was upset because his dream had gone to crap. But financially, he didn't actually have a stake in it anymore.
Right. The court case and how it ends up with the USFL filing the antitrust, winning, but getting the judgment of $1, all basically centers around Donald Trump and his testimony and the targeting of Donald Trump right from the very start by the NFL as a figure that really they could take advantage of his ego, that he was somebody who wouldn't play well with the jury. Can you talk us through that, the court case? I know it was very detailed. It was pretty painstaking for anybody who was in the courtroom, but just how Donald Trump came across in that.
Yeah, so he became the USFL star witness by his own choosing. And they had all these players who were willing to testify and all these other owners who were willing to testify, and they didn't. And Donald Trump became the star witness. And the NFL decided, we're going to make this guy our villain. And it wasn't hard to do. So Trump testified at length, and he lied on the stand. He actually lied on the stand. I had a USFL owner call me the other day and say, I wish you wrote more about how Trump lied. And this is actually a guy who voted for Trump in the election. He's like, you should, because Trump said on the stand that Pete Rozelle offered him an NFL franchise. That's a lie. That's just factually untrue. It was a lie. So they made him the villain, and he came off so horrible. And what the attorney for the NFL did, really wisely, is he made the entire trial about Donald Trump and about this guy who just wanted a franchise. And it was poison for, again, it was poison for the USFL. It backfired so badly. And at the end of the day, they lost. And the funny scene is at the end of the trial, Donald Trump was actually sitting in court next to the owner of the New York Giants. And the owner takes out a dollar from his wallet and gives it to him.
So obviously then there's a direct correlation between an awful lot of what's happening now in the White House and Trump's hatred for the NFL and players taking the knee. Like, can you draw a direct line for his hatred for the NFL from what happened in the courtroom that day?
Oh, I mean, look at Donald Trump's career. He tried buying the Colts, failed. Tried meeting with Pete Rozelle, failed. Tried suing the NFL, failed. Tried buying the Dallas Cowboys, failed. The whole patriotism thing where he's killing Colin Kaepernick for kneeling. Donald Trump during the USFL would regularly talk on the phone, do business while the anthem is playing, sitting in his box. It's all nonsense. It all dates back to his dislike and distrust, not even distrust, his dislike and his rejection from the USFL. It has nothing to do with patriotism. This guy, again, I always say this and I can say this to you. I mean, this is a guy who gave $0 and 0 cents to 9/11 causes after 9/11 in his own hometown. This is a guy who spent 4 years insisting that the sitting president of the United States was a Kenyan-born Muslim and that he had proof. I mean, the lack of patriotism that this guy has shown through the years. This is a guy who mocked John McCain, a POW, for being captured. So for this guy to have the audacity to talk about patriotism and heroism, it's a joke. It's a total joke. It's just a con.
And at the time then, Trump's reaction to the verdict, what happened in the days and weeks afterwards?
He just moved on. That's what he does. It's kind of his strength. He just moved on. Next, he was asked about 10 years ago on ESPN. Small potatoes. Like, all these people lost their jobs. All these dreams died. Small potatoes. Not a big deal. It's just small potatoes. Who cares? Moved on.
And did the USFL, did it die that day?
Over. It was over. I mean, they tried going on. And, you know, we're going to play in the fall still. We have plans. In fact, this is a true story. In 1990, I was a high school senior, Mayo Pack, New York. And I wrote my high school thesis. You had to write a 20-page paper. I wrote a 40-page paper about the death of the USFL. I would say my teacher must have hated that. And I found an old phone number for the USFL. This is 4 years after the court case. And I called up, and there was still an answering machine. Thank you for calling the United States Football League. Leave a message. I left multiple messages. I never heard back. It was dead.
It sounds like there were an awful lot of good things about the USFL. And there's always still that deep sadness at the end of January, beginning of February, when you're waiting 7-8 months for the start of the new NFL season. That I know in America there's college football, but here in this part of the world where there's not as much coverage of it, you're waiting for your Sunday evenings for the NFL to return. And they had television deals back in the 80s. They were getting good crowds. The standard was improving year on year. All right, there was a bit of partying and there were people who didn't take it too seriously. But are you surprised that nobody else has come in over the last three decades and tried to have some sort of a rival or an alternative to the NFL?
Well, they're doing it now. There are two new leagues coming along. The XFL, which was a few years ago, and now they're bringing it back. And then the Alliance League. Both are going to be drafting regionally. They're going to try. And they're also going to try not to directly take on the NFL, which I think is smart. They want to be sort of leagues that are almost more developmental. And I think one of the USFL's weaknesses is they tried to take the NFL on way too soon. You know, the thing was entrenched in American culture. You can't just come along and be like, we're better. Look at us. We have cool helmets. Like, you need more than that. So, you know, also, it's just expensive and it's complicated and it's hard. So, you know, I would never start a sports league. I just think you're going to lose a lot of money.
Have the NFL spoken about their attitude towards these potential leagues?
I think they're okay with it. They haven't. They don't say a ton because I don't think they view them. The USFL was a direct rival. I don't think they view these leagues as direct rivals. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a brilliant book, and as I say, the Trump stuff takes so much attention. You haven't got an angry tweet from Donald Trump yet.
I want it so badly. I really do. I would take all my budget for a promotion and put it into one fake news tweet from our fake president. That would be lovely. Also, I just want to say, I hope you guys know, and I really mean this, that most of us are humiliated and embarrassed. I always say when people think, wow, Donald is really standing up for patriotism, I always think, you're a moron. This has nothing to do with patriotism. This is a guy who got rejected by the NFL repeatedly, who sued the NFL, didn't work out. It's not about patriotism. It's never been about patriotism. And I always say when I talk to people in different countries, I always say this, and my friends say this too, do not confuse Donald Trump for most of us. You know, he's not us. This is an ugly moment in American history. It's a sad moment in American history. We're mortified and humiliated. And every time he opens his mouth, I wish someone would just stick some coal in it. And you know, and it's just, you know, I always say, this is a guy who on 9/11 bragged about the size of his building, now having the tallest building in Manhattan. This guy is not patriotism, and he's definitely not America.
Jeff, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. The book is brilliant. Football for a Book, The Crazy Rise and Crazier Demise of the USFL. Take it easy. Enjoy your coffee.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.